You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Welcome to another special edition of the podcast, bringing you the best talks from the recent meeting of the Foundational Questions Institute in Tuscany in July. I'm Zia Morali, and thank you for joining me as we'll be finding out how to build an AI physicist from Max Tegmark. Tegmark, who happens to be one of FQXI's founders, is based at MIT. He made his name in cosmology, but in recent years he has been thinking deeply about artificial intelligence. In his talk at the meeting, Tegmark encouraged physicists not to simply ask what AI can do for them, but to think about what physicists can do for AI. Now, advances in AI have been vast, but there are still problems, for instance with racial bias being trained into algorithms that are used to help make decisions in the justice system. What skills do physicists possess that can help to train AI to do better, and crucially make them trustworthy? The workings of algorithms can be inscrutable, and one of Tegmark's goals is to improve our understanding of what's going on inside these black box systems by creating intelligible artificial intelligence. In a moment, you'll hear Tegmark speaking, and I should just say that I usually post the full audio of talks from our meetings onto the site. But in this case, I've cut one section from Tegmark's talk where he refers to a paper with a student because it heavily references a video that he showed during his presentation, and you obviously can't see that. But I'll put up a link to that paper, Towards an AI Physicist for Unsupervised Learning, on the site, fqxi.org/community/podcast. And when the video from the talk is posted, you'll be able to see the full thing. I should also mention that the sound levels on this particular talk are a little bit sketchy, and I apologise in advance for that, but I've tried to do my best to smooth things over there. But here's Tegmark talking about the benefits and problems of AI, and how he and his student built a code that used neural networks to discover 100 equations taken from the Feynman lectures on physics.
I'm going to talk about steps towards building an AI physicist. And more broadly, we're here to discuss the interface between AI and physics in this session, which splits into two parts. There is AI for physics and physics for AI. AI for physics is what Scott Aronson was joking about, us being users, we physicists, and using AI to solve all sorts of physics problems. I'm instead going to talk about physics for AI now, how we can use ideas from physics to actually do AI better. Now, it's quite remarkable how the power of AI has grown recently. Just think about it. Not long ago, robots couldn't walk. Now, they can do backflips. Right? Not long ago, we didn't have self-driving cars. Now, we have self-flying rockets that can land themselves with artificial intelligence. Not long ago, AI couldn't do face recognition. Now, AI can simulate Anthony Aguirre's face saying things that he never said. Not long ago, AI could certainly not save lives, but now it can already diagnose prostate cancer, lung cancer, and a lot of eye diseases as well or better as than human physicians and a lot cheaper. Not long ago, we were totally stuck on the protein folding problem, and just last December, DeepMind came and crushed all the human competition in the protein folding competition of the year, doing real science. Not long ago, of course, AI could not beat us in the board game of Go, and then Google AlphaZero took 3,000 years of human Go wisdom, put it all in the trash, and became the world's best player just by playing against itself for 24 hours. And the exact same AI, by playing against itself, also kicked their butt in Shogi and in chess. And the most striking thing here isn't that it beat human gamers, but that it was able to beat human AI researchers, taking all of who had spent decades handcrafting algorithms for doing this stuff, which is now all obsolete. So if AI is so good, why does it need physicists to help it? Because it also has challenges, many challenges. For example, challenges related to us not understanding how it works. This has led to AI deployed in courtrooms, from turning out not working the way we thought it did and being racially biased. It's turned out to airplane systems not working quite the way Boeing thought they worked, even though they were really simple. It's turned out to let Knight Capital lose $440 million in 45 minutes because their algorithm didn't work quite the way they thought. And even things which we usually blame on people, like hackers, if you think about it, are actually caused typically by people not understanding how their systems work and the security holes that they're in them. So to help with this, my group at MIT is focusing on what we like to call intelligible intelligence, where we want to make systems not just smart, but actually trustworthy, because we can understand better what they're actually doing. And this is something I'm going to argue that we physicists can really help with a lot.
Just to interject here, this is where I have chopped out a section from Tegmark's talk about his paper, Towards an AI Physicist for Unsupervised Learning, because you really needed to see the video that he referred to in his talk for it to make more sense. But I'll put details about that on the site. Here we pick up Tegmark's presentation again as he discusses another of his papers.
Then we did this other project. This is spearheaded by my grad student Silvio Mariano Drescu, where we took harder physics problems. We took the Feynman lectures of physics and pulled out the 100 equations in there that were the most famous or complicated ones. For example, problems like this. You're given a time series of data and asked, okay, what function is this? This is known as symbolic regression. Linear regression is if it's a linear function of many variables. Here it could be any old function. Kepler worked on this one for 4 years and came up with the ellipse formula. It was worth those 4 years, right, because it revolutionized science. But it was hard for him. You'll see that this is one of the ones that we solve automatically now in about 1 hour. There's an easy way of solving these automatically. If you just take all possible symbolic expressions and you encode them some way, we use reverse Polish notation, and then you just try them all, from shorter ones to longer, complicated ones. But this obviously takes an exponentially long time, right? It would take, just to get the Gaussian, would take 30 years. To get the Doppler effect formula would take a million years. And to get the Planck blackbody would take longer than the age of our universe. So that's kind of dumb. The more popular way of doing this, the most successful so far before our paper, was to use genetic algorithms that we already heard some great stuff about from the stage here. But what we did was different. We decided to take some ideas from physics, like symmetry and so on, and combine them with the power of neural nets to see if we could do it better. So we have a list of 100 equations, stuff of this kind, formulas. And the way we feed the problem to the computer is just we give it a giant table of numbers. All these columns here are just each of the input variables in the formula, evaluated at random places, and the last column is the evaluation of the formula itself. And the question is, okay, what function of three variables is this, say? Or nine variables or whatnot. And the way our algorithm works is it uses a series of physics ideas that I'll explain to iteratively transform this hard problem into one or more simpler problems with fewer variables until it can just crush the whole thing. What are the ideas that we use? Well, the most interesting one is we train a neural network first. I won't waste your time on dimensional analysis, which your physicists can easily code up yourself a way of doing automatically, which sometimes reduces the number of variables. But the most interesting thing that we did was we trained a neural network first to be able to approximate pretty accurately the function. Why is that useful? It's still super hard to look at the neural network and figure out what formula that was. But that gives you the great advantage that now you can generate more data than you were given. You can actually start making little experiments. So if you want to know, for example, if your function has translational symmetry in two variables, you can try changing two data points by adding the same constant to both and see if that changes anything. And then once you discover some simplifying property like that, it simplifies your whole thing. I'm going to give you just, I'll walk you through some examples. Suppose we want to do Newton's law of gravity. Here's a formula in the upper left corner with nine variables in it. What we're really given is just a table with 10 columns, right? Nine of them are the variables, one of them is the output. And then we train a neural network to predict this, and now we try a few things, and then we do dimensional analysis first automatically. Now we reduce it to just six variables by getting out a prefactor. If you stare at this, you see the way it depends on M1 and M2 is really simple. It just depends on the ratio, right? When you have a neural network that evaluates this function, you can discover that fact. You try both M1 and M2, and you multiply them both by 1.1, and you notice nothing changes. You do some tests like that, Now we have a hypothesis that if you just replace M1 and M2 by their ratio, so you have one variable less, you should still be able to solve the problem. You can then iteratively repeat this and discover, for example, that the only way it depends now on, say, E and F here is by their difference. There's a translational symmetry there. It came after that scaling symmetry. And then here, another kind of thing we look for is separability. Is it the case that the neural network that describes this is really just some function of some of the variables times or plus or whatever, a function of the other variables? In this case, yes. So it's just the function of A times the function of the rest. And in the end, you can just find it by brute force or polynomial fitting. So let's cut to the chase. What happened when we actually tried this? The best software out there so far that you can feed in your own data and get formulas out of is one you have to buy. It's called Eureka. It's really nice. It solved 71% of these. But our code actually solved all 100. And it's free. We can give it to you. And when we added noise and so on, it had good properties. It works on also small fractions of the data. Then we decided to make it a little extra fun by going back and coming up with even more complicated formulas that weren't in the Feynman lectures that we hadn't even looked at when we were optimizing our code, sort of as a training set. So here is the Klein-Nishina formula, for example, and you'll recognize many of you, hopefully some of your favorite ones here, to see how well it would do on this. For this one, this commercial Eureka software could only do 3 out of 20, whereas our code actually still solved 18 out of the 20. And this sounds really weird for me to say. I found this fact that we could use these ideas from physics to help AI to be not just interesting, but even useful. Like, imagine, I'm talking at an FQX conference about something which is actually useful. So if you have any kind of data set that you think may contain patterns, maybe there's some formula in it you haven't discovered yet, you can actually just try this code we have. It's free. And maybe it'll find the new Aguirre formula or the Still formula or whatever. It'll still be your formula because you could just use our software. And more importantly, what I think is the message I want to leave you with here is that it's really exciting to think about the interface between physics and artificial intelligence, and not just to think of ourselves as what Scott Aronson called users of AI. I think we really have a lot to add to AI. Why? Because we have a really different mindset. The goal of engineers is usually just to make something work and then sell it, right? But as a physicist, you usually set a higher bar. You really want to understand why it works exactly and try to prove it, that kind of stuff. And for low-impact applications, it doesn't really matter so much. If your laptop crashes, it's annoying, but maybe you just lost 2 hours of work. But if that thing was controlling the airplane that your loved ones are in or your nearby nuclear plant or the nuclear arsenal or something, it's maybe annoying isn't the word you would use when it crashes. And what I think we see here is that there's a great opportunity to take AI systems that are very powerful and get away from this thing of saying, oh, you should trust it because it was trained on 4 terabytes of data and worked every time, to getting things which are just as powerful, but that you can actually trust because you can understand how they work. Thank you.
That was Max Tegmark talking about the role that physicists might play in improving the trustworthiness of AI. I'll put a link to the paper that you heard him speak about there, AI Feynman, a physics-inspired method for symbolic regression, on the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast. As always, you can discuss these ideas on our website or contact us on Twitter at FQXI or on Facebook at FQXI Physics. And you can always reach us by email at podcast@fqxi.org. Keep visiting the site because we will be posting more audio of the talks, more blog posts analysing what was discussed at the meeting, and video will be appearing shortly. I've been Ziya Morali. Thank you for listening.